Attention listeners, AfterSight's annual hike is coming up on July 27th.
It was a really good experience for me.
Visit aftersight.org/hike and become an audio trekker today.
That hike today gave me so much courage.
Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the May 5th, 2024 Sunday's reading of the Loveland Reporter Herald and Happy Cinco de Mayo. My name is Shawneen Shanahan. Today we'll be reading the following main articles: Parking Proposal Okayed by the Senate by Nick Coltrane, and Bridging the Gap by Jocelyn Rowley, and following up with miscellaneous articles. Legislature. Parking proposal okayed by Senate. Lawmakers must wrap up work by Wednesday. For the second year in a row, the sounds of Cinco de Mayo echoed into the Capitol as lawmakers toiled on Saturday to find common ground on proposed reforms to state land use and property tax policy. The 120-day legislative session ends Wednesday, and lawmakers are still wrestling with some of the marquee proposals of the session, though with some breakthroughs on issues that had threatened to chew up valuable time while other potential hotspots emerged. The Senate passed Saturday a significantly narrowed ban on minimum parking requirements, one of the proposed land use reforms that emerged from the failure of last year's omnibus proposal. The original bill had aimed to ban parking minimums throughout many of Colorado's cities and suburbs. To tone down the opposition, sponsor Senator Nick Heinrichsen, a Pueblo Democrat, limited the ban to just areas along transit corridors. Senators also ribbed Heinrichsen by offering an amendment that would remove his parking spot at the Capitol. Quote, "It will save a lot of money for the builders, and they'll be able to offer more product in the form of affordable housing to actually build housing, as opposed to building parking and housing for folks that don't necessarily want any parking," Senator Kevin Priola, a Henderson Democrat and bill sponsor, said. The proposal, House Bill 1304, will now need to return to the House for reconsideration. Meanwhile, two other major land use proposals, one to boost the number of accessory dwelling units throughout the state and another to increase density along transit corridors, still need to formally pass the Senate after passing the House. Some senators have raised concerns about both as possibly stepping on local control. Meanwhile, lawmakers negotiating a proposed long-term reform to property taxes continued to run around the Capitol to find a deal in the waning days. It needs to be introduced on Monday at the latest to have enough time to clear the building before the end of the regular session and stave off another potential special session on property tax. In addition to filling the gap in tax policy left by the repeal of the Gallagher Amendment and giving property owners a break on rising property taxes, they're trying to head off of ballot initiatives that would severely cap property tax collections. Backers of the initiatives argue it's about keeping the government from growing faster than paychecks and keeping homeowners solvent. But state officials, including some Republicans, warn it would lead to draconian cuts to state and local government services. Parties on all sides of the negotiations say they're closing in on a deal, but it is still being tuned and not guaranteed. Quote, "We're pushing really hard," said Dave Davia, a president of Colorado Concern, a business group backing some of the initiatives, adding that they're hoping for a legislative solution. Other priority bills for Democratic leadership continued apace Saturday. The Senate formally passed a pair of bills to reduce emissions from oil and gas production and a levy per barrel fee to pay for transit in wildlife habitat. The bills were introduced this week to ease simmering tensions between environmental groups, legislators, and the industry, and end dueling legislation and ballot initiatives that are affecting the industry. They will now go to the House for consideration. Another bill to put a 6.5% excise tax on guns and ammo in Colorado also cleared a key Senate committee after concerns about its movement through the chamber boiled over into the public. The tax would raise an estimated $39 million a year and go to victim services and behavioral health programs. The Democratic Women's Caucus of Colorado publicly accused Senator Kyle Malika, a Thornton Democrat, of holding up the bill and threatening to kill it. He called the letter full of falsehoods and said the bill was merely going through standard amendment negotiations. He praised advocates and bill sponsors before voting yes on the bill in committee. Meanwhile, the amended bill raised the hackles of Senator Kevin Van Winkle, a Highlands Ranch Republican, because it removed school security as a possible use for the excise tax. He promised vigorous debate on the Senate floor if it isn't replaced, a potent threat as lawmakers race against the constitutionally required end of the session. Voters will also have the chance to remove defunct language in the Colorado Constitution defining marriage as between a man and a woman after the House approved a referred measure Saturday. It already cleared the Senate. Referred measures to amend the state constitution need at least two-thirds support in each chamber to pass. It passed with bipartisan support in the Senate, but near party lines in the House, where Democrats hold a supermajority. The proposed amendment would remove a ban approved by voters in 2006. It has been unenforceable since 2015, when the U.S. Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage nationwide with its ruling in Obergefell v. Hodges. A majority of voters will need to approve this proposal this November for this to take effect. Youth Crisis Response Unit, Bridging the Gap. Co-responder teams bring mental health support to Thompson schools, by Jocelyn Rowley. As a social worker at Loveland High School, Taylor Bushi interacts with students dealing with behavioral or mental health challenges on a routine basis, especially after the COVID-19 pandemic. Until recently, however, her resources were limited within the school system, making it a challenge to arrange emergency or follow-up treatments for students in crisis. Quote, "Behavior and mental health needs are the highest they've ever been," she said. "There's two of us for the whole school, and navigating all of the community resources and the legal aspects of the things is a lot." 18 months ago, Bushi and her counseling colleagues around the district finally got some much-needed backup. In November 2022, Thompson School District launched a pilot, quote, Youth Crisis Response Unit, one of the first of its kind in the state. The unit paired a school resource officer from the Larimer County Sheriff's Office with a clinician from Summit Stone Health Partners to provide mental health services to students beyond what the schools can offer, including hospitalization, access to ongoing treatment, and follow-up support. Demand was so great after the first year that a second co-responder team with a Loveland Police Resource Officer was added a few months ago. For Bushi, having the added support has not only eased her workload, it has also eased her concern for the students in need of stronger interventions who are now getting the level of treatment they need in a timely manner. Quote, "These guys help with that so much," she said. "Having a co-responder connected to Summit Stone has been awesome because they can get them a therapist like that, whereas if it's just me, I can call a million therapists and there is a wait list or there's all kinds of things," unquote, "that can slow the process down." There seems to be a consensus among the stakeholders, Thompson School District and law enforcement officials, Summit Stone management, and the members of the co-response teams, that the program has made staff and students safer and is leading to better outcomes. According to the Colorado Behavioral Health Administration, the co-responder model combines a law enforcement officer and professional clinician to answer calls involving mental or behavioral health crises. The two use their training and expertise to de-escalate the situation and prevent violence, then later help the individual in crisis connect with treatment programs or therapy. Joe Vajansky, Director of Safety and Security for Thompson Schools, saw the power of the co-responder model firsthand during his time as a corrections officer and reserve deputy for LCSO. During the summer of 2022, he approached his former colleagues about adapting it for use in schools. 3 months after that conversation, the new Youth Crisis Response Team, consisting of LCSO Deputy Brandon Solano and clinician Marianne Ramos Flynn, were answering calls for assistance in elementary, middle, and high schools across the district. Quote, "I just saw a need in an area that was maybe beyond the capability of a school professional, and that parents needed help as well," Vajansky said. And so it was just a way to come and truly wrap supports around a child that included the school, the parents, and then a clinical person that could help. Despite the prevalence of co-responder units in Colorado's law enforcement agencies, the two teams operating in Thompson schools are unique. Currently, just two other jurisdictions have school-focused units, but state health officials believe it is only a matter of time before the practice becomes more widespread. Quote, pairing a clinician with officers when they're regularly responding to behavioral health issues is a very common practice, wrote Colorado BHA media manager Stephanie Bush. Quote, so pairing clinicians with school resource officers is a logical next iteration. It is not unusual for schools to request a co-responder team to respond, and there will likely be more school teams in the future. TSD's co-responder teams are called when a school staff have exhausted their available options for resolving a crisis or when a student needs mental health or legal resources outside the school. That can mean anything from a student with suicidal thoughts to physical altercations to reintegrating after a hospitalization. To date, co-responders' calls have been evenly divided between the three school levels, Vajensky said. The teams also assist with threat assessments, conduct follow-up visits with students, and engage with families to ensure that the student also has support at home. Quote, we get pulled in a bunch of different directions and in a bunch of different ways, Solano said. The first several months of the program were strictly reactive for Solano and his partner as words of the unit spread through the district. Quote, we were literally going from call to call to call, and then threat assessments, and then safety plan meetings, and we weren't able to be as proactive as I wanted to be, he said. I think a huge piece of what we can do is to get ahead of some of the stuff. That led to addition of the second team, LPD School Resource Officer Bobby Joe Miller and clinician Amy Healy, who were activated in March. The two have hit the ground running thanks to the path carved by the first team and are providing a much-needed relief valve for Solano and his current partner, clinician Michelle Sylvester. Quote, we're all caught up on referrals and have been able to spend more time in school, Solano said. We love to see kids when they're not in crisis. The co-responders and school officials were reluctant to share specific success stories from the program out of concern for privacy, but said it has helped students dealing with substance abuse and suicidal ideation, among other concerns. Solano also reported success in helping families connect with resources and getting long-term services to those in need. Beyond that, he continued, it has allowed him to build relationships with students and provide a positive model of law enforcement to those who may have had only negative encounters in their past. Quote, our goal is to connect kids with services, he said. It is not to do anything law enforcement related unless absolutely necessary. The program has also led to better working relationships between law enforcement, the district, and mental health professionals, said Stephen Fay, a corporal with LCSO's operations division, leading to more effective operations. Quote, for the school district to actually invite us in as a partner and as providing a perspective on things, it's been kind of nice, he said. To have that trust from the school district is unique. With few official guidelines or resources, the Thompson District's co-responder program continues to be a work in progress, but it is one of the participants are excited to expand. In recent months, Vajensky has been fielding calls from other districts across the country about the program and has been asked to speak at both regional and national conferences on the subject. Quote, it's pioneering what these folks are doing because they're literally writing a book on the things that they are going to be setting the stage for generations to come, Faye said. In addition to the number of district co-responder teams, both Vajansky and team members also hope to expand the scope of services they provide to include more education and community engagement. Both are working to raise awareness of the unit among other law enforcement units, so the co-responders are called when there's a student-involved incident outside of a school setting or during a school vacation. But the co-response teams also face limits in what they can do, said Megan Hasinski, the Summit Stone Clinical Supervisor, often for reasons beyond their control. As an example, there are very few beds available for inpatient treatment for students younger than 13, even with the opening of Longview Behavioral Health. Quote, We're really struggling in particular age groups to find the appropriate level of care, she said. We've had several kids who have been evaluated by multiple different people and have been found in need of residential placement, and there's just no options unless we're looking out of state or several hours away. Despite these limitations, Hensinsky and others agree that the benefits of having more mental health professionals in schools are hard to deny. Like the State Behavioral Health Authority, many said they see the co-response teams in schools as a given within the next 15 to 20 years. Until then, Vijansky plans to continue to putting his trust in Solano, Sylvester, Miller, and Healy and let them do what's necessary to support TSD students to the best of their abilities. Quote, I can rest assured that my students and families who are going through a difficult time are getting supports that are maybe outside of my capacity, he said. It's just nice to work in tandem with both teams and to make sure that we're supporting our students and our parents. Obituaries. Michael E. Anderson of Johnstown, Private Family Services to be held. Betty McKinley of Loveland, visitation 4 to 6 p.m. Thursday at Kibbe Fishburne Funeral Home. A celebration of life service will be held in June. Detta Daly of Fort Collins, cremation, no services. Virginia Schleiger of Berthoud, cremation, no services. Colorado Classrooms. ChatGPT is transforming education, by Elizabeth Hernandez. Amber Wilson is rethinking how her classroom at Denver's Thomas Jefferson High School will operate next year, in large part because of the artificial intelligence program, ChatGPT. Her English courses will feature more in-class assignments and less homework. Heeding the College Board's Advanced Placement AI guidance, Wilson will ask her students to defend their thinking orally, and the 24-year veteran teacher is considering using programs to monitor her students' online whereabouts on school-issued devices. Wilson admitted to sporting rose-colored glasses about ChatGPT, a chatbot that uses generative AI to create unique text responses to users' prompts when it debuted at the end of 2022. Quote, we can't stick our heads in the sand about it, she said in a recent interview. It's here. We're going to have to figure out how we're going to use it. A year and a half into ChatGPT's life, the AI program's impacts on education in Colorado and beyond are irrefutable. Conversations about artificial intelligence in the classroom have dominated conferences and training sessions for schools and universities across the state. Local and national technology and education experts are forming a new statewide steering committee to explore the future of AI in Colorado education. In this early Wild West era, decisions about ChatGPT's usage in the classroom largely depend on who's in front of the whiteboard and who's in administrative leadership. That's left educators and students alike still finding their footing as they navigate the new frontier of yet another disruptive technology feared by some and exalted by others. Last year, Wilson told the Denver Post that she wanted to incorporate ChatGPT into lessons to teach students appropriate ways to use the free, accessible software, such as for brainstorming, researching, and outline purposes, a starting point from which they could add their own knowledge and creativity. Denver Public Schools, however, has tried to limit access to GPT in the classroom by blocking students from using the program with their district email addresses, said Billy Sayers, the district's director of STEAM, or Science, Technology, Engineering, Arts, and Mathematics. The school district does not want teachers using ChatGPT in educational instruction either, due to student data privacy concerns, he said. The Denver Post and seven other newspapers last week sued ChatGPT maker OpenAI, alleging the company illegally harvested copyrighted articles to create the generative AI program. Colorado's largest school district is looking into programs that would establish guardrails and address safety concerns around AI usage, Sayers said, acknowledging that students do need to be prepared to encounter AI in their post-graduation lives. Despite those constraints, ChatGPT still loomed large in Wilson's classroom this year. Her students' work often didn't read like high schoolers she knew, she said. AI plagiarism trackers confirmed her fears. Students were using ChatGPT to write their assignments. Soon, students grew wiser about covering their tracks, she said. The plagiarism was still apparent, but near impossible to prove. Quote, I don't have 20 to 30 minutes to spend on every piece of writing to determine if they're thinking or not, Wilson said. Now I have to come up with new ways to work around this, and I like being innovative, and we need to be as teachers, but it does feel exhausting. In light of generative AI, which draws from information gathered from the internet to create text responses, images, and sounds based on users' request, Wilson said it's time teachers rethink their assignments altogether. Quote, if the question is so easily answered by AI, then maybe we allow the students to use AI to learn that, she said, and then figure out what product we want from them. Matthew Farber, an associate professor of educational technology at the University of Northern Colorado in Greeley, taught middle school in the early 2000s. He remembers the moral panic over the specter of Wikipedia and Google in roading education. Quote, I've always been an early adopter to bring these things in and integrate it into best practices in the classroom, he said. Now, Farber teaches teachers how to do the same, and he incorporates generative AI into his coursework. His students can use the technology with guardrails. They shouldn't be copy-pasting wholesale from ChatGPT, he said, but they can use the program for inspiration. One of his assignments asks students to engineer ChatGPT prompts to have the program produce a children's story. A student might ask ChatGPT to write a bedtime story about a puppy going to Jupiter in the style of Ernest Hemingway, Farber said. Then students analyze the stories and tweak their prompts to make the stories better, more inclusive, enlightening, immersive. Not only do students learn how to play with generative AI, but they learn what makes a good story, he said. Quote, it's this idea of refining prompts so students become critical thinkers of what AI is giving you, Farber said. It's kind of a newer version of how we taught Google search or using physical encyclopedias when I grew up. Not teaching these skills, Farber said, or blocking the programs on school-issued devices creates a technological equity problem. Students who rely on school computers won't develop the same skills as their peers who can go home and tinker. Quote, by not teaching how to use these technologies, you're not preparing children for the jobs of the future, Farber said. That's not to say everybody needs to be a prompt engineer, but it would be like graduating in 2010 and not understanding how to do a proper Google search. Farber sees innumerable benefits for students and educators from using generative AI in the classroom. ChatGPT can rework a lesson plan for a different grade level, Farber said, or assist English language learners in their academic pursuits. Farber, like Wilson, believes generative AI is pushing educators to reconsider how they've always done things and lean into innovation. Quote, there are teachers in the educational technology communities who will say if the assignment is something that ChatGPT can do in 20 seconds, maybe it's not a good assignment, Farber said. Diana Wagoner, a language arts teacher at Battle Mountain High School in Eagle County, said when planning a lesson, she thinks about how students might use AI appropriately and inappropriately so she can guide them in what they're allowed to do. Quote, we are working toward lessons that allow critical thinking to continue to happen while establishing which tasks can take advantage of the AI tools available. This is the new normal, Wagoner said. I believe the future of writing will be individuals managing generative AI to help them produce clearer, more meaningful prose and help eliminate students getting stuck in the process of writing it down correctly. For educators to feel comfortable deploying newer learning methods, Farber said school leadership must offer meaningful professional development. That's where Molly Jamison, the interim director of the University of Northern Colorado Center for the Enhancement of Teaching and Learning, comes in. Faculty members come to the center for one-on-one professional development, webinars, and workshops to learn to become better educators. The Greeley Institution has held 6 trainings around AI in the classroom this year and plans to make it a focus next year, too, Jamison said. At UNC, instructors decide the rules around ChatGPT in their classrooms. Jamison helps them craft instructions in their syllabi, depending on whether they want to forbid all generative AI usage in their classrooms, encourage it with parameters, or if they land somewhere in between. Thank you for joining us for the Loveland Reporter Herald. My name is Shaneen Shanahan.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.